This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. Hello, hello. How are you all doing? It is so great to be back live with you all once again. You have me. This is J. Lewis Mills, and we are now going to be on the level with J. Lewis Mills. I hope you all have had a great week. I hope you had a prosperous week. I've had a bit of an up and down week. It's been joy and it's been pain. So, that's just such is life, right? The good was very good. The bad was, it was livable through. But, so we are here tonight live. If you want to call in, please make sure you dial 1-888-429-5471. Again, that's 1-888-429-5471. As you all know, I just really like to jump right in it unless I have any announcements. And I don't have an announcement, but I do have something to say at the end of the show pertaining to something that I said a couple of weeks ago. So we'll get to that at the end of the show. But tonight I am going to. So here's the thing. When you hear about anorexia, when you hear about bulimia, when you hear about eating disorders, sometimes, but not all the times, do you hear how it affects the family members? Does it affect the close family members? How does it affect the friends? If the person is in a relationship, how does it affect that person? And I really think that a light needs to be shed on such a subject because there's a lot that goes into being someone that is dealing with a person with an eating disorder or with a mental disorder. There is a lot of patience that comes into play. There is a lot of real love that even actually comes into play. But the one thing that nobody ever really talks about is how you are supposed to trust and how you are supposed to love this person that you don't even recognize anymore. This is not the same person that if this is a child, this is not the same person that you raised. If it's a brother, if it's a sister, this is not the same person you were raised with. So it actually takes a little more because you are almost, in a sense, having to feel for what you could say was a stranger. So tonight I have someone on my show. She is a family member of someone going through an eating disorder. Could be a mental disorder, but at the end of the day, she's still going through a very trying situation with a family member of hers. I usually, as you all know, I will usually introduce my guest and tell you who they are. However, this guest of mine tonight, she is an actress slash director. And the person we are going to be speaking about is her daughter. So in order to keep the level of anonymity to a respect, we're just going to call her Miss M is what we're going to call my guest tonight. Because if I told you what her name was, it really wouldn't be difficult to figure out who her daughter is. So, Miss M, thank you very kindly for being here. And how are you doing this evening?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, J. Lewis. I said it again, right? I said your name wrong again. Say it.
Yes, it's Jay Lewis, but you're fine. I know who you were talking to.
I put a little flair to it, a little
yes, ma'am.
South American flair. I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. I can tell you, this is the beginning of making a dream come true for me, in that I've expressed many, many times to other doctors who have treated my daughter that I definitely, definitely wanted to take this out to either high schools or colleges and just start taking it on the road and letting people know that, you know, if you have a loved one, that you have a friend, you know, don't be shy. Don't be shy to ask them what they're going through. Don't be shy to go up to them and say, hey, I think you have a problem and I want to help mm-hmm. you. Or don't be scared either, because I can tell you my girlfriend. Well, my daughter is my girlfriend too.
Absolutely.
My daughter, she definitely experienced some just desertion, if you will, when she was struggling. And I think it was because some of her girlfriends in school just were really having a difficult time with dealing with, you know, how do we approach her? How do we mm-hmm. do an intervention, if you will? Or how do we speak out and say, hey, this is not okay. We love you, you know? And I think they were in a maturity level where they just couldn't handle it. And so instead, mm-hmm. it was just best to go, you know what? What you're up to is not what we're up to. So we're just going to kind of turn our backs on you, if you will. And I'm sorry, but that's the way it's going to go. And so I think, you know, I've always wanted to speak out and say, if you have a friend, if you have a loved one, and you know that they're struggling with something like this, or you know something's up because they're not behaving the way they normally behave, that's when they need you. That's when they need
yes.
you to go up to them and go, hey, what's going on? You know? Yeah.
Now, how old, Miss M, was your daughter when she first started showing the signs of having an eating disorder? What was that whole beginning like for you?
So it revealed itself somewhere around between 15 and 16. And she hit it well. And usually they do. The story from other doctors usually is that they either don't even know that they're engaging in an eating disorder behavior, or they do, but they're kind of hide it from their parents. Mm-hmm. And either it's because they're either abusing laxatives, or they're doing the binging purging kind of thing. And or let's say they're not even binging purging. They might just be eating a normal meal, but they feel so guilty that they run after, you know, wherever you've eaten out to dinner, say, and they go and run in the bathroom, lock the door, and they're throwing it up. They're getting rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they hide it very well for a while. So you really don't know what's up until something. You don't know what's up until you really know what's up. You know what I mean? Like,
how did you know that something was up with your daughter?
When she started disappearing a lot after school, and you couldn't reach her for like an hour or two, and meaning she would turn off her phone. She quite literally would turn off her phone because she really wanted that time to engage into her exercise.
And then this is something that she did all of a sudden? She just started turning, she's out of the blue, she just started turning her phone off?
Yep.
Okay.
It was unusual, and I did have to get in touch with a couple friends who I knew were, you know, close with her, and I would call them and say, do you know where she is? And it would be sometimes the same old, where they would, oh yeah, I definitely do. I saw her run from school, and she ran away. She's on, you know, on her run. And that would mean she would either run to a spinning class, or she would run here, or she would run there. And then she found like a mentor, an older woman who she would actually go spinning class with. And I finally got the balls, if you will, the cojones, to call this woman. I said, please do not engage with this activity with her. I think it's out of control for her. And the woman said, oh, she's an adult. She can make that choice herself. And I knew
that's what the adult said to you?
Actually, she did. And I thought it was really crazy. And then sure enough, that same adult 6 months later calls me up and goes, your daughter has an eating disorder. She's going to die. You need to save her. And I was like, well, wait a minute, I reached out to you. Like it takes a village, right? I'm working a full-time job. And I said, I reached out to you and I asked you for help and you told me that she was an adult and she could make decisions. So clearly it's gotten out of control. And I saw that ahead of time that it was getting out of control. And yet you didn't. And now you do see it's out of control. And now you're actually calling me and saying this. I mean, that's not okay. So, you know, it was interesting. I had some people that were for me and people that were against me and they didn't really understand what I was going through.
Mm-hmm. When you say you had some, I think that's interesting. When you say you had, I totally understand the people that were for you. But when you say you had some people that were against you, what was that like? What's that about?
Well, and it was interesting. I think it was a community of people who kind of got it that I was working hard. But then I don't know if they. You know how it is. You can look from the inside out and you make your judgments, but maybe you don't know exactly what that person's going through or what they're really doing day to day. So I don't know if they just had an old story about me where, oh, well, it's just Alice, you know, it's just, she's working. She's probably pursuing her acting career. No, I was actually working. I had given up my acting to really actually focus on a career where I would put my daughter through college. And so, therefore, you know, no, it wasn't the same old, same old. And I think they were coming from a past and they weren't coming from the present. And they had no idea what I was doing for a living at that moment. And so, yeah. And so they were just basically like, well, wait a minute, maybe I'm attacking you because, you know, you're just being selfish. Well, no, I'm not being selfish. I'm actually working this other kind of career so that I can be there more for my daughter.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and one particular gentleman had called me, too, with concerns and said, I'm really concerned about your daughter. I think you need to seek treatment. And around that time, and it, again, it was getting a little later on. It was around 16, going on 17 almost. And when that gentleman called, he said, I really, really am concerned. I hope that you're seeking to, like, look for other avenues, pardon me, for treatment for her. And I said, you know, it's very good that you've called me because my mother has just come into town from where we're from, and she's wants to do an intervention as well, and we're thinking about, getting her into a facility. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we did make the phone calls. We made the rounds, and we were trying to figure it all out. But this is right after a lot of it was revealing itself to us. So we were new at it. Again, we didn't know what we were really doing, and we didn't know what we were into, and we didn't know how deep it was, and we didn't know if she's just suffering from a mental disorder and an OCD, or whether she was just really, like, what was going on exactly, right? So we're novices trying to wade through the water, trying to figure it out and navigate through it, and but we were given some, you know, like I had called a couple therapists and they told me, like, call these facilities, check these out and see if this isn't the direction that you should take. And we went that way.
1-888-429-5471. Again, that's 1-888-429-5471. I am speaking with Miss M tonight about the life of someone going through an eating disorder and or mental disorder with a family member or a friend. So can you talk about you mentioned a couple of times that intervention. So can you tell myself and my listeners how that went as well? Was the intervention the first contact you made with your daughter about this? And if it wasn't, then what was the first contact? And then can you talk about the intervention?
So the first contact was the gentleman I was working for actually had a troubled son who was dabbling into some drugs. And I don't know if you know about huffing, but I believe he was doing that as well. And we kind of caught him, so we got him a therapist. Mm-hmm. And so around that time, I approached the therapist and said, would you mind seeing my daughter? And he said, no, absolutely. And so my daughter was open to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But she was so intensely into her exercise and her addiction to it that she, albeit that she would go to these therapy sessions, she would lie to us. She would lie to him a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you countless times where we would see him on a Saturday, say, and we would walk right out of his session, and right then she would just go, I need to go to the gym, or I need to go to a yoga studio. Or I'm like, well, wait a minute, we just had therapy, and now you need to go exercise? That's just weird.
Yeah, it's counterproductive.
Right. And at the time, of course, you know, there was this part of me that was enabling her because I just kept wanting her to be happy. So mm-hmm. again, I was in the beginning stages of just really not knowing how to navigate. Mm-hmm. So the intervention that happened that summer was very minor. It was just my mother alone and I kind of confronting her and letting her know that we were very concerned at the behavior she was engaging in and the exercising, of course. And at that time, I'm not really aware whether she was purging or not, and she claimed she was not.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't, to this day, I'll never know. But mm-hmm. I can tell you that she definitely developed that habit as well, and we had a very major, big intervention with the whole family in 2016. And the whole family got involved. And it was just because she'd already gone through a lot of treatment, and then mm-hmm. and here we were again, just back in the same place.
For the first intervention, excuse me, for the first intervention that was just you and your mother. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you, how long did that conversation take? And the reason I'm asking you how long did that conversation take was I'm wanting to know, was your daughter initially receptive to it? Did she fight it? What was that whole thing like?
So it was like two rookies not really knowing what they're up against and
okay. Okay.
And having a conversation and a couple meetings with her during the holidays, during the 4th of July holiday, to be specific, and gathering and getting together with her and telling her, you know, we're really concerned about you. We think you need to go to a residential facility. And it was, you know, an absolute no. I don't. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm fine. And, you know, let me get through high school. Let me get through this. Let me get through that. It was a lot of negotiating. And then it became, okay, I'll go do this. And so then it was good because it was, okay, well, as long as you go do this other option, then if you can get through that program of this particular place, then you can go to college and hopefully you'll be well by then. And so it was kind of like, you know, in a perfect world, okay, we'll just sign up and you'll get well by the end of summer and then you'll go off to college and everybody will be happy-go-lucky again, right?
Mm-hmm.
No such thing. So, because all the while she was going to this treatment place, she would do their rules. She would follow their rules, rather, and she would do everything they told her to do. But in the end, she was hiding in their bathrooms and engaging in her exercise and doing all sorts of things.
So this is something else that you said a couple of times. So what your daughter would do is, even if you were out at a restaurant, your daughter would eat her meal, and I'm just in the beginning. Your daughter would eat her meal, and then she would excuse herself from the table and go somewhere and exercise.
Sometimes, or sometimes, you know, she began to engage into some weird behaviors even at the dinner setting, where she would lift herself off of the seat, and it was kind of like, I don't know how to explain it, because I don't even know this particular machine, but it's, you know how you hold yourself up and you do these leg lifts in the air?
Yes.
And you're holding yourself with your arms?
Yes.
So it's
yes,
kind
that strengthens
of like
your core.
Right. So she was engaging in that kind of behavior at the dinner table in her chair, where she was actually lifting herself out of her chair and then lifting her legs up.
Mm-hmm.
So she's strengthening her core, if you will.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, and, it was all about her core, right.
And this
she
is...
She would talk about it that way. Sorry.
This is how it started. It started for her with the exercising.
Yes.
Do you know, or can you? And you know, I'm going to end up going back and forth during our conversation. But for what we're talking about right now, as far as the exercising, did the exercising ever stop and purging start, or was it just a combination? Was it just exercising first and then a combination? Did one ever dominate the other?
I think it was the exercise was the strongest, and still has been.
Okay.
Really.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's get to this second intervention, where there were more family members. How many treatment centers had your daughter been in by the time you had the full family intervention?
So when she goes to treatment centers, it started with one, but where she was fine, she wasn't too mm-hmm. thin. It was just something to get through, and we were hoping that it would make a difference in her life before she went off to college. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you hear about a lot of college kids get an eating disorder while they're away in college.
Yes.
And so... thought, well, we got to nip this in the bud before she goes away to school. So she, in 2015, had lost a lot of weight and ended up in the hospital.
How much weight did she lose?
She lost about 25 pounds or more, because she went from 125 down to 110. Then from 110 went down to 96. 96 leveled that out and stayed that weight for a long, 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 long time. But then all of a sudden, after going to college for a little bit in the fall, had and it was a community college here in Los Angeles, had lost right at the holidays, just lost a ton of weight, like another 20. And so, yes, quite alarming, and it was coming off at a rapid rate. In fact, it was mm-hmm. coming off so fast that she was surprised even. When we went to the doctor said, I need to see you every Tuesday and Thursday and make sure you're going to be okay. And this is when she was probably about 89 pounds, 86, 89. And before you know it, like a month had gone by, and it was another Thursday visit, and it was like, okay, you're 74 pounds. Time to go to the hospital. And my daughter was in tears. She even said, I can't believe this is happening. And the doctor said, well, I'm sorry, but you're no longer able to maintain your weight or gain weight for that matter. So
she can't believe what's happening. She can't believe that she's
couldn't
being...
believe that. The weight was coming off. She didn't know that your body at a certain point, when you have this disease, by the way, at a certain mm-hmm. point, your body starts to metabolize itself. So if you're not feeding in enough calories or you're not taking enough in, it just mm-hmm. starts eating itself. So you lose weight whether you want to or not.
And what was the smallest, what was the lightest, I don't want to say the smallest, but what was the lightest your daughter ever got to during this whole ordeal?
So this year, past year, she got down to 70, which is it was like seeing the Day of the Dead, if you will, or
yes.
or even that the cartoon, the Dia de los Muertos cartoon, where this kid, you know, he starts to lose his body because he's going over to this mm-hmm. where the dead are, and mm-hmm. she looked like that, and it was very scary, and she was still engaging in exercise. I actually took a video of it because I thought, you know. I said to her, just very honestly, and it was very cold to say, but I said, you know, if I can't save your life, I'm going to save others. So I'm going to take a video of you showing others how gnarly this disease is. that you're still engaging in exercise, even though you're 70 pounds. And this gentleman here in UCLA is trying to take your heart monitoring, and you're standing up, and he wants you to lay down in your bed right now and so that he can take your EKG, and you won't allow him. It was just, it's such a shocking video. Because you can hear the gentleman in the background going, ma'am, will you lay down so I can take your EKG? And she won't because she's engaging in exercise. And then he goes, okay, well, I'm going to go to another patient and I'll be back in about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just, you know, and at this stage, they're so malnourished that they're not thinking straight. It's kind of like a drug addict because they're just not thinking straight. Their brain is so malnourished.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't have the proper fats. Yeah.
I do get that. I do understand that. And I think I'm getting ready to lose some of my listeners, but it's okay. I understand.
Sorry if I'm doing that to you.
No. So I understand that this is a disorder, albeit eating, mental, whatever. I totally understand that. I totally understand that there are sometimes, you know, it's a disorder. So there are things that people cannot control. But at the same time, it's still something that I wrestle with, because there are times and in certain situations when certain things happen, it makes me wonder, is this really? And I'm not meaning with your daughter. I'm just meaning I have heard times before. Where I've heard situations that have happened, and I go and I'll ask myself, so is this an eating disorder? Is this a mental disorder? Or is this just a human being that is being rebellious, acting like a victim, and wants attention? Unfortunately, that is a real thing. And unfortunately, that is a real thing more often than not, that it absolutely has to come into almost every conversation when you're dealing with someone like this. Is this real, or is this just something for attention?
Sure. I think that there are many young women and men that are, and I want to make a point about that you know, it knows no race or socioeconomic anymore or sex. There are a lot of young men that are developing this disease. There's older men even. I'm hearing about a new generation of women even in their 50s when they're empty nesters, that they have nothing to do, and all of a sudden they have an eating disorder because they have such anxiety, they don't know what to do with themselves. There are plenty that have a mental disorder, whether it's OCD, anxiety, or depression. You have many stars like what's her name from La La Land that's, you know, come out and said that she has an anxiety disorder. You have mm-hmm. so many people now coming out and admitting, especially the famous, which is great because they're coming out and saying, listen, I too have an OCD or I too have anxiety, depression. Yeah. And it helps others out in the world to know they're not alone, that this really is a communicable kind of thing. A lot of our community has this kind of thing, and I don't know if it's an epidemic from, you know, being on the phone all the time, being on the computer all the time. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I just do see a lot of new generation coming up with this illness. And yes, you're right. It can be for attention as well. You can have young ladies and young men who just need a parent or mm-hmm. a significant other or somebody to give them some attention and love, and they develop this because they're not getting it, you know, they're not getting it in a positive way. So they develop some kind of negative addiction or mm-hmm. negative disorder. So that's when they get their attention, unfortunately. And it exacerbates the whole issue. Yeah.
You are on the level with J. Lewis Mills, 1-888-429-5471. Again, that's 1-888-429-5471. So getting back to the full family intervention, whose idea was that? Where exactly did it take place, and how many family members were there?
It was in Los Angeles. It was actually my daughter was showing signs of getting worse again, and she was in a part-time treatment. She was, and she was seeing a therapist, and she was seeing a doctor. However, mm-hmm. the doctor, I believe around that time, the treatment center said if she doesn't up her care, meaning into a higher facility type care, like hospitalization again, because she was beginning to lose a little bit of weight. They approached me and said, if she doesn't do that, then we're suggesting that you kick her out of your house, like go to that extreme, which I had never done. I had never done the tough love, like really, you know, strong tough love like that. And mm-hmm. they said, we recommend it because it might motivate her to, you know, obviously seek treatment. So I had done so, and I had not seen her in about 2 weeks. And the doctor had said at the appointment, her regular physical doctor said, I really recommend that you do an intervention, a family intervention, because she's mm-hmm. not going to seek treatment. And so on, you know, her advice, I really did some investigative work and found somebody out of Orange County who was really great. She does for everything, for drugs, for alcohol, and for eating disorders, but she also is really astute with eating disorders. She knows what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And basically every family member, including her father who lives out of the country and a lot of family members who live on the East Coast, flew in town for this intervention.
And specifically for the intervention. They came in only for the intervention.
Well, and they were on the phone every week that we had a meeting, on the phone, via Skype, via whatever, always there, present for an hour-long phone conversation on how to prepare for this intervention, which took us 4 or 5 months. So meaning we were on the phone preparing to do this intervention for 5 months, and then we all wrote our love letters, and then we all set a date that we could all be there, and members mm-hmm. flew in, and we kind of corralled her and fooled her into meeting with us on one mm-hmm. occasion. And
where did it take place?
In a hotel.
Okay.
We corralled her, and we were going to do it in my apartment, but she mm-hmm. kind of figured it out, if you will. She's mm-hmm. pretty slick. She's a very smart young lady. She knew that we were going to do this, and don't ask me how. She just kind of was at the right place at the right time, where she overheard a conversation with her father and just figured it out. Okay. And so we had to kind of postpone it and kind of ghost her for a while. We all ghosted her for like about 4 days. And then mm-hmm. it was my sister who flew in from the East Coast who said, I want to see you since I'm here in Los Angeles and I want to get together with you. And then kind of convinced her to get back to the hotel. And then we wrangled her and corralled her and kind of, you know, it's kind of one of those situations when you're doing an intervention, you really are feeling ganged up on by, you know, by the other people who are doing the intervention against you. You really are, because you're singled out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We even had a woman there that experienced who was totally recovered, but who had been mm-hmm. in Madison's, her place. And she sat there and talked to my daughter. And the next thing you know, she even said, like, I've been in your place, I've been in your shoes, and I'm here because if you decide to go to treatment, I'm here to get on the plane and go with you. I mean, this was a woman that, you know, we didn't pay her a whole lot of money. She was willing to do it because she was like, I'm all about saving these, I'm a stand for saving others who have had, you know, because I've been in their shoes. Mm-hmm. I want to see recovery. And
how did that intervention go?
It was a room full of tears, and everybody, not a dry eye in the house, shared their love letters and told her. I mean, it was really lovely how this experience is, too, because you go back to her childhood, and you go back to the time that, you know, of your personal relationship with that individual, and you tell them all the things that you loved about them and why you still love them today, and who they are to you, and what they've done for your life, and how they've impacted your life in a positive way, and how they're impacting you now in their illness, and what it's doing to you. And not in a selfish way, not in a victim way, not in saying, oh, because of you, oh, well, gosh, now
absolutely.
I'm in my life.
Absolutely, yes.
Not at all like that. It's just more like, this is how your illness is impacting me now. And this is how I want to see you, and I want to see you recover. And, you know, so I'm asking you, choose recovery, please. And then they have the option to do so. And my daughter looked dead straight in all of our eyes with tears in hers, saying, no, I'm not going to choose it right now. And it just, I mean, it devastated every single one of us. I think we were all blown away.
Did she blown away? I'm glad. Yeah, she glad it wasn't
answer,
me. That's what I can say. And I, you know, I say that, and I don't want to upset anybody, but listen, I just flew all the way across the country. I took my time and my money, and you're going to tell me that this is something I'm telling you as a family member, how this is affecting me, and you're telling me that it's something you're not going to do. Yeah, we probably would have had it had that had been me. And I guess this is me revealing, I guess some people are going to say that I'm not understanding, but I am absolutely understanding. And I understand that if a bunch of family members get together that you have a good rapport with or had a good rapport with, and they are letting you know that something you are doing is not only affecting you, but it is affecting them because they are worrying about you, then, yeah, if you just flip your nose up to that, then, yes, I'm sorry. We are going to have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just...
How did the people that came from the East Coast, how did they take it? Did anyone lose their temper?
No, not one. It was such a room full of compassion, and I think it was just... I don't know if I have a family full of insecure people or what, but I think they were just devastated by it. They were just let down. I think that everybody had an expectation that, gosh, once we do this, there's no way she could say no. That there's no way once I read my love letter to her, or once this one reads their love letter to her, there's no way
she's going to say no. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she says no. And then does she just get right up and leave, or is she there for a while?
Know, she was there for a long while. And actually what happened is it kind of got thwarted too, because she actually went into a hyperventilating crying fit. And it was so scary because she lost color and she looked like she was turning green. And the interventionist who, you know, we hired and we did pay tons of money to, She just said, I don't want to risk her life. She could have a heart attack on the spot because she's so low weight and everything else. I think we should need to call 911 and we need to get an ambulance. And that's kind of what thwarted it as well. I mean, she'd already said no to us. But what thwarted it more was we had to go to a hospital with her because we didn't know if she was going to get sick or she was going to, you know, we just didn't know what was going to happen next, if she was going to have cardiac arrest. Because when they're at that low, low weight, which
yeah.
I think around this time, you know, she was about 89 pounds and she was heading for disaster anyway.
Yeah. How long did she spend in the hospital?
Just 24 hours. They, you know, we even told them, I tried to pull aside a psychiatrist and tell them, mm-hmm. You know, she is suicidal. She said that she might as well kill herself right in front of the whole family. And, you know, since she's an adult, they took her aside and they said, is that true? is that true? And she said, no, of course not. And then they just believed her and said, okay, that's it. No, she can be discharged. So that's another thing. You know, I encourage parents, and I've talked to other parents who have been dealing with, you know, young adults. I said, I would behoove you to get conservatorship, because if they're not, if they're 19, 18 and older, of course, if they're 18 and older, and they say things, they deny what they say right in front of, you know, the whole family or you or anybody, the psychiatrist is obligated to believe them because they're the adult. So if they say, no, I'm not hurting myself, or no, I'm not suicidal, then they'll get discharged. But if you have conservatorship, that's, you know, your way of empowering you to say, well, wait a minute, you know, I want to save my loved one's life, and this is how I'm going to do it.
How hard for anyone that just heard you say that could be an option for, what exactly is that conservatorship, and how long is that process? What has to be done in that process?
So you do have to, you do your homework. If you want to do it yourself, you would have a lot of paperwork to do and a lot of filing to do. But in California, they will observe the rights of that individual, meaning the rights of that daughter or loved ones, correct? Okay. Mm-hmm. But if you get proof, like even a picture of your loved one at a very low weight, and you take that before the judge, that judge in Los Angeles even is going to favor on your side, because they're going to say, yeah, obviously you're trying to save this individual's life. Mm-hmm. You know, something's very
How
right
long
here.
Did the process take here in California? Of course, we're not, so we don't know how long it'll take anywhere else, but how long did it take for
like
you
in
here?
In Colorado, there's other laws, and in other, you know, states, there's other laws, of course. In Los Angeles, it usually favors on the side of the individual who's actually has the illness. But when you're trying to apply for conservatorship because you're trying to save their life, and they're severely, you can prove that they're severely ill because they're also severely underweight, it takes a couple months where you will get temporary conservatorship, and then you will go in front of the judge one more time, and they will either award you permanent conservatorship, and which with even permanent conservatorship is only really 8 months to a year. And then you have to see the judge again, you know.
Okay. So the only thing that, and I mean, I'm sure everybody has had the psycho girlfriend or boyfriend before. So the only thing that I know about is a restraining order, how to get a restraining order against a psycho girlfriend. I have to go to the courthouse. I have to fill out paperwork. I have to tell a judge what the situation is, and he has to decide at that moment whether or not the restraining order is going to be granted or not. Is that kind of the same thing with this? Once you're at the court, they tell you right then and there you have a temporary conservatorship?
Yes. I mean, what happened was, and I did hire a lawyer, and I sent my lawyer pictures of my daughter severely ill and severely thin, which helped my case immensely, of course, because this judge was a female, and she, you know, she has a kind soul, but she, at the same time, she made it very clear. I don't hand out conservatorships like, you know, like a driver's license, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I just don't do it. And then she made it very clear why. She made it very clear that the law is such that in California, an individual has their rights to have their rights. And she goes, so I don't take those rights away very lightly. Mm-hmm. And she said, but given the circumstance you're in, I had seen the pictures. I'm very concerned for your daughter's health and welfare. I'm not going to allow you to take her out of the state, however. And she did make that impact. And she said, so if you have other facilities that you feel deemed necessary to take her out of the state, then you're going to have to come back before me, and you're going to have to give me a reason why, and then you're going to have doctors, you know, back you up with reasons why. So again, saying, you know, in not so many words, I don't take it lightly, taking people's rights away. But, you know, that's fair. I thought it was fair.
How did your daughter react to this When you told her, was your daughter in the courtroom when this happened?
She could not be because she was too thin, and she was already being tube fed at a hospital. So her lawyer was present on her behalf, mm-hmm. and her lawyer let her know that I won. And of course, then she wouldn't speak to me for 3 days. I was evil.
It was just 3 days?
Yeah. Okay. It was pretty much 3 days. She wouldn't talk to me. She gave me mean, evil looks and glares. And when I visited her at the hospital.
Wait a minute. She was. Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant she was giving you mean, evil glares in your house.
No. At the hospital. She's at the hospital. Okay. I'm visiting her. And of course, you know, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
And so, it was kind of, it went kind of like that. And then, of course, you know, I went to visit her on the fourth day, and of course, you know, her brain is so malnourished, she could barely probably remember even that we mm-hmm. went through that. To mm-hmm. be honest with you, I know that that's partly why, you know, they give in, because they're like, oh, okay, you're here, and I'm still sick, and I'm trying to get better, and I don't even know what to do. You know, she knew that she was helpless, that there was nothing she could really do. And she was beyond. I mean, like you asked me how low her weight was. She was 70 pounds, and they had to tube feed her to just get nourishment. You know, any kind of
whenever she had to have this tube feeding. Is that anything that she ever physically fought? I mean, 70 pounds, I don't think you're going to win that fight. But did she mm-hmm. ever, like, when did they ever, did you or anybody else ever have to physically restrain her?
They did do that. They actually did do that, yeah. Because she was throwing some fits, and they had to restrain her. Yeah.
And did she ever, was there ever a moment that your daughter told you why she's like this? I totally understand. Not every, you know, as you said earlier, it can sneak up on someone. But has she ever given any type of a reasoning behind adopting this lifestyle?
She had said a couple times that she knew at this juncture that it wasn't any one thing that triggered her, that it was a few things, but that the overlining, if that's even a word, the main theme of it all was that she wasn't worthy, that she never felt worthy, you know, of having, I guess, a life. Like, she has no, she knows she has no direction. She has no passion, real mm-hmm. passion, like something that's worth living for.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, yeah. And so she's always been on the you know, the path to try to discover what is it that excites her to live for.
And she just didn't have anything that she felt excited to live for? Is that it?
She says she loves to dance, she loves to sing, she loves to do these things, but then, mm-hmm. you know, she turns right around and says things like, I don't know what my purpose is, you know.
And how old is she when she's saying this?
She was about 18, 19, you know.
So yeah. If she would have known what her purpose was at 18 or 19, then she should have written a book to become a billionaire, because I don't think anybody knows what their purpose is at 18 or 19.
I know. And I've told her, I said, I hope you're very blessed with the life where you'll change your purpose on many, many different occasions.
Yeah.
As I have, you know.
I mean, I still remember. I mean, I don't have one foot in the grave or anything, but I'm not in my 20s either. But I still remember 18 and 19, and I can remember there were some times I didn't know if I wanted to turn down a street left or right, let alone what life choices I was going to make. I'm making the wrong decision turning down a street while I'm driving. So, I mean, it's a thing. It's It's what happens. I'm not trying to – I really don't want you or anybody to think that I am trying to knock what your daughter said. I'm glad that she actually came out, and whatever the reasoning is, whether it's a reason that – and I'm saying this to you as well as my listeners. If you ask somebody why they did something, don't discredit their answer just because you don't agree with it. There have been times, even when I was growing up, or even like now, even at the age that I am now, somebody will ask me a question and I'll give them an answer. Nah, that's not it. What the fuck you mean that's not it? You just asked me the question. I'm giving you the answer. Nah, that's not it. No, I don't buy that. I don't buy that. Well, then what'd you ask me a question for? So many times we lose our family members or we lose our friends because in their mind, what they're saying is rational. What they're saying makes sense. And they're telling you this is why they're doing it. I don't care if your daughter would have said, I'm doing this because I see unicorns and they tell me to do this every day. She's giving you a reason why she's doing it. Now, you know your daughter better than anybody else, so clearly you would know if your daughter was being sarcastic when she said that or not. But if your daughter in a real way said, I'm seeing unicorns, look, she answered your question. Don't like second guess it or don't say that's not a good enough answer. I am very glad because there's a lot of times you know, people won't answer that question, no matter how close they feel to somebody, no matter how long they've been going through a situation. I've known counselors that have spoken to people with eating disorders, and they were together for I know someone, she was a counselor for this woman for over 10 years. And she said that it wasn't until after that 10 years was up that this woman finally confided in her and told her why she was bulimic. And it was because a guy that she was madly in love with called her a fat cow. Broke up with her because he said she was gaining too much. She gained too much weight. She looked like a fat cow. Now, apparently, her and this gentleman, this girl, I'm not going to even call him a gentleman, her and the person that she was in a relationship with, you know, they had spoken about marriage. They had spoken about kids. And I guess, you know, they had somewhat of a good relationship. I don't know what it was. Something happened to this woman to make her gain weight, something other than her becoming pregnant. And it wasn't because she was eating a lot. There was something medical that was going on with her. And so it caused her to gain weight. So when this guy broke up with her, she not only stopped taking – I think it was the medication that she was taking. That's what it was. The medication that she was taking was causing her to gain weight, and it was for whatever her situation was. And he told her that he couldn't be with her anymore because she was a fat cow. So she goes completely off the deep end and just starts purging. And – It just wasn't a good ending. So, you know, when you it also does matter in how you react to people. And I don't mean you, Miss M, because had a conversation earlier today. So I already know, you know, more of what happened. But I am just saying, you know, there is a real thing to how you approach someone with a disorder, how you treat someone with a disorder, how you engage someone with a disorder. You do, in my opinion, need to have all of the sensitivity in the world when you're dealing with that. But I'm saying this in the beginning. Once you start seeing those patterns, And I'm pretty sure, Miss Sim, you can tell us when you started seeing patterns of where, you know, it had to have at some point, there had to have been, no, let me, I shouldn't say that. Let me just ask you, was there any point where you thought this was just a situation where your daughter was trying to get attention?
Sure, sure. And you also, I mean, I'm speaking purely for myself, but you go through a denial phase too, where, oh, well, they'll grow out of it. This is just temporary. I mean,
yes.
You know, what girl hasn't had this, you know, going into college or in college, or, you know, this will all go away. This will all work itself out. And sometimes it just doesn't. It can get worse before it gets better, and or it can really take control of them. And before you know it, it becomes such a habit that they don't even know where to stop it or how
yeah.
to stop it.
Yeah, it becomes a lifestyle. Yeah. They're so used to it.
Right.
It's almost like they say about people that lie or people that steal.
Sure.
People that lie, they do it so often. They do it so naturally. They don't even realize when they're doing it. Like, they don't even
right.
try to do it anymore. It's just something that happens because they've been doing it so much. People that steal, same thing. They can just walk in somewhere and, I didn't realize I just picked that up. Sometimes that's the truth. They really don't realize they just picked it up. So it does. It absolutely does become a lifestyle. And mm-hmm. I know that this is probably going back to the beginning of it. But, you know, something else that I hear people saying that they do is they try and make their loved ones' favorite meals constantly, consistently, to try and get them to eat.
Sure.
At what point in this journey did that happen for you? Did you try and make all of her favorite foods for her to
absolutely.
Eat?
Absolutely. I even did the home cooking last year. You know, it was no intention to let her move back in by any shape of the imagination. However, I found myself in the situation last fall allowing her to do so, because the promise was predicated with the idea of she would go back to school. So therefore, you know, let me live with you, Mom, so I can go back to college. And, you know, I promise I'm going to take at least 12 or more credits. And because of that, you know, can I live with you, please? And it was all like, well and good. Absolutely. And boy, I can tell you, I was making the black beans. I was making the tuna fish sandwiches. I was making things that I knew that she would like and eat. And but she would not eat those during the day. She would eat those at night, and she would do the binging purging kind of thing with them. So even if, let's say, you know, I'm making something that is familiar to her from her childhood with, you know, when I was married to her father still, I would make that, and I would make enough that you could store some in the freezer and whatnot, and then the rest of it would be in the fridge. She would go through the whole thing in one sitting and probably, you know, purge the rest of it. And, you know, your heart breaks because, you know, there's nothing you can do. She's in a habit.
Yeah.
She's definitely in a habit. Yeah.
Now, this started with your daughter in her mid-teens, 15, 16, and she is now in her early 20s. We'll just say she's in her early 20s. Present day today. So we're not too far from this being a 10-year ordeal. We're a few years away from this being a 10-year ordeal. Still in all, what is the current state of the situation today?
So still at a very low weight, living on her own with a couple roommates, has a part-time job, but, you know, definitely needs a full-time job. Because as they say, I mean, if you go to Al-Anon meetings or AA meetings, you always know that the busier are you, the better it gets. So alcoholics always know that the busier they are, the better it gets, because they're not going to go to that bar.
Yes.
They're busy. They're working.
Yes.
They're going to their meetings. They're working their recovery. Same thing for her. She just needs to get a little busier. I don't plead with her anymore. I just make suggestions. I say, you know, maybe you should go back to school. Maybe you should find another job, you know, whatever you can do.
Do you still have compassion?
It ebbs and flows. There is.
Okay.
Definitely a lot of love. Definitely some more quality time now that she doesn't live at home. Mm. So when we are together, it's a little more loving. You know, and not food involved and not exercise involved. It's just very quality spending, you know, quality time where we're both really present with one another. I think that's very positive.
So the time that you spend together, I'm not saying that this is a rule. I'm just saying this is the way it is. The time that you and your daughter spend together, there's no eating and there's no exercising. So you guys couldn't very well go to brunch together, or you couldn't go hiking together. Is that a fair statement?
Right. Like I won't even entertain that. If she suggests that, I don't go there. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go for a hike. I go, nope. Let's just go lay on the beach or hang out or talk or, yeah.
What would you say if your daughter said, let's go get a salad?
I would go for it.
You would go, okay.
Yeah, okay. Because if she was able to sit down and eat in front of me, that would be a miracle.
When is the last time you saw your daughter eat?
2015, out of treatment, where she actually for 2 weeks was able to sit down and plate her food. And that means three meals. And that's terminology for eating disorder talk, too, by the way, is plating your food and sitting down and mindfully eating. So she was able for 2 straight weeks to sit down, plate her food, actually have 3 meals in front of me. And then it got a little askewed and started going awry, where she just felt like self-conscious and she started eating like outside of the dinner table.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. When you say plate her food, that means put the food on the plate herself, right?
Yep.
Okay. Because that is a thing, isn't it? I mean, it does mean something for them to actually put the food on their plate versus sitting at a table waiting for someone to bring it to you. That is a real thing, right?
Right. And it's also then they're portioning out what they're going to eat, and they're also noticing like that they're having like a well-balanced meal. So they're looking at their food, seeing that they have like a protein, a dairy maybe, depending, and a salad and a this and a that, and so that they see that they have a well-balanced meal on the plate.
And this had we're actually over the hour, so we'll probably have to wrap it up pretty soon here. But
sure.
I just want to make mention also, you know, a lot of times in society, people will think someone is bulimic or is anorexic because they're trying to lose weight, because you touched on this a little bit, where, you know, back in the day, this was pretty much a rich person situation, and you didn't even see men that had this going on. Well, now, as you said, this disorder, it's not racist. This this disorder, it's not a financial elitist. This disorder, it's not gender bias. It's not. And, you know, we live in a time where it can really, truly affect anyone at any time. So, you know, this is an absolute real thing. What do you, Miss M, what do you foresee for the near future? As far as this goes with your daughter, how do you, are you just in it until the wheels fall off? Do you have a certain amount more time that you're going, time and money? Speaking of that, how much, not, I don't want you to get specific, but how much would you say you have spent with this ordeal, and how much longer do you have to go?
Definitely have gone into some financial hardships, but
okay.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, that's not to say that others haven't. You can read articles on this disease and you hear yes. about parents mortgaging their homes, you know, yeah. in order to pay the bills. I met another really kind family in Ohio who were being bullied out of money from Eating Recovery Center of Denver, and finding no hope in sight because their insurance was running out. I mean, it's a difficult situation because you're sometimes between a rock and a hard place of saving your loved one's life and also the insurance companies and also the facilities. So you're at the mercy of three separate things. So
yes,
because it can be a racket too, by the way. It can be quite the business. And so you have to be really careful. Right.
Yeah. I could almost imagine, you know, and I mean, I this is kind of getting off the beaten path, but I think my listeners know me well enough to where they'll understand what I mean when I say this. But I would almost liken recovery centers almost to a church, you know?
Yeah.
You're not really there to help the people. You're more there for the profit that this industry can bring you.
If you're not there for it, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do. And, you know, it's – look, this is just the world that we live in. I totally get that. But when it comes to situations like this, when it comes to the actual – and I'll use your word – the actual rackets as we're talking about, when it comes to these type of things, you know, it's like, how do you know who to really go to for help? Just like when a new church pops up, well, how do you know that's a good church to go to, or is the preacher just some misogynistic guy that in 5 or 6 years is going to get pulled out of the pulpit because he's sleeping with the missionary or he's doing something with the little boys in the choir or something, you know? You never know. So, you know, because we live in a society where all of these are just real things, you know, it doesn't make – I mean, I'm not being Captain Obvious here, but it doesn't really make the situation that much easier when it comes to someone like yourself, which is what my show is about tonight, how this affects people that are not the ones with the problem. You know, your right. daughter isn't the one more often than not. And I don't know any statistics. I didn't speak to anybody about this. Right now, I'm just using my own common sense. But right. more often than not, it's family members that are paying for these rehabs. It's family members that are staying up late at night. It's close friends. It's let's just say loved ones. It's loved right. ones that are paying these bills. It's loved ones that are staying up late at night worrying about this person. Whoever is the one going through it, they're not worrying about them as much because they just don't have that capability to do so. So I'm not trying to knock them, but they're not worried. It's like the loved ones care more about the person in the situation than the person in the situation cares about themselves. Again, another Captain Obvious statement. I totally get that. But the reason I'm doing this show is to show how this actually affects people. It puts people in financial ruin. And that's why yeah. when I asked you earlier if anybody lost their temper, because, you know, at some point that has to be a real thing. It's like, look, we're doing all of this for you. We don't have to do this. I don't right. have to pay for this. I didn't have to fly out here. When someone yes. tells me, J. Lewis Mills, what I have to do, my answer to them is there are two things in life I have to do. I have to die, and I have to stay a black man. There's no way around that. There's no way for me to not be black anymore. There's no way for me to live forever. So the only right. two things in life that I ever have to do is stay black and die. Everything else is a choice. So amen. I am making the choice to spend my money that I could spend on something else. I'm making the choice to spend my money to get a plane ticket to come and see you, to come and sit down and talk with you, to try and visit with you, to try and fellowship with you, and you're going to tell me no? Right. As I told you, Miss M, in our conversation earlier today, I would have, if I was in this situation, I probably would have, or if I was speaking to your daughter, I would have honestly told her, you are so very lucky that I'm not your mother. Because if I were your mother, there's a lot that you would not have gotten. There's a lot. I mean, this whole situation could have gone a different way. And anybody that's out there that wants to say, oh, well, Jay Lewis, I'm just glad you're not a parent. And I would hate to see if you were a parent. I wouldn't. I absolutely wouldn't hate to see me as a parent. But at the same time, if you're living under my roof and I am teaching you the proper ways to go and I am spending my money to pay your bills and I am spending mm-hmm. my time to teach you and to help you become a better person, and you basically just thumb your nose up to me and tell me that this is how you're going to be, fine. You make that choice, but you for damn sure are going to be that person outside of my door. I'm not going to put myself. See, I don't think just because you're a mother or just because you're a father, I don't think that means you have to put yourself in peril because your children are doing something that you clearly understand is not something that they need to do. Now, before we hang up, if someone wants to call in and yell at me and say, well, you have to understand this is a disease, you have to understand this is a disorder, listen, I do understand that. But at the same time, I also understand unless you are too mentally far gone to take care of yourself, when you have loved ones sitting down with you, if you can understand, like, so when someone says, I'm not ready, that's mm-hmm. probably the most truth that they are giving, because mm-hmm. you can't, you know, it's like they say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
That's right.
You know, you can force somebody to go to a rehab, but if they want to, they are just going to sit there with their arms folded. I don't give a fuck what y'all talking about. I'm going to just sit here and be disruptive long enough for y'all to kick me out. You know, yeah, because they don't, that's not what they want. So you just spent thousands of dollars for somebody to go somewhere and fold their, I wish a motherfucker would. That's all I can say. I mean that with as much love and compassion. I promise, I mean that with as much love and compassion as I can have. But I have seen far too many friends of mine. Look, mm-hmm. I didn't have a cousin that had an eating disorder. I had a cousin that had a drug problem.
Right.
My aunt and my uncle spent thousands of dollars. When I say thousands of dollars, I think I remember hearing a conversation where it got into six figures of what they spent trying to get my cousin help. The only thing that happened was, you know, my cousin, he did that strong talk. He would tell people what they wanted to hear. Oh, I've been called to preach. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm doing the other. And people will believe him. And I'm sitting there younger than him, and I'm like, y'all are really believing all of this? You all are really sitting, you really think that you know this man just like I know this man. You think that this man is really going to become a preacher. But yet, because he tells you he's going to become a preacher, now he can stay in your house rent-free because he's trying to get his life back together. When behind your back, he's going to his friend's house still smoking. He's going to his friend's house still drinking. So when I say I have experience with this, I have experience with this. My cousin was inside of a crack house in Los Angeles, California, and got into an argument. And they told him and the person that he was in the argument with, you need to take that outside. When they got outside, the man my cousin was arguing with pulled out a knife and stabbed my cousin to death. That's what my aunt and uncle's money paid for. That's what all of us trying to go to my cousin, telling him, look, man, you got to we understand this is hard, but we're here for you. And when you don't want to listen at some point. Now, look, I didn't spend a dime on my cousin. I didn't spend a dime on his rehab. I didn't spend a dime on his rent. I didn't buy near one piece of food for him. But I did have a conversation with him, and I told him, look, if you ever need to talk, we can talk. He looked me dead in the face. What the fuck would I want to talk to you for? Okay, I'm good. I'm done. You don't have to say shit else to me. You don't. Now, yeah, I was upset when my cousin got killed. I absolutely was. But I would be lying if I said, am I really the only one that thought this is how it was going to end? Is it just me? Am I the only one that doesn't want to pretend like, oh, well, he's going to make it through? The fuck he is. You know this guy just like I know this guy. So my aggression, my passion, my anger, my annoyance, it comes when I hear and see people that are given opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to change their lives, and they just keep thumbing their nose up to their family members and to their friends. And then you've got people out there who don't even have family members or friends to even pay this money. They wish they had somebody to pay for them to go to a rehab. So because I know that's a real thing, when I hear of someone that is going to turn this down, and again, let me just reiterate, I understand this is a disorder. I understand that you're not thinking correctly. But you can for damn sure look somebody in their eye and they can get it. They can understand. Right. This is something I need to change. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Excuse me for getting on my soapbox, but
it's good. It's good. No, and it's so true. I mean, there's been plenty of young women and men that I've met that, you know, they've been right there in my daughter's shoes, and some have been had it for a very long time, and they finally are in a recovery center or somewhere and saying, I just have had enough. I'm ready to recover. I've done it enough. I've come back and forth here enough. This is the last time. And God love them. I mean, though, when you get to that situation, a lot of the time it's really sad because then they've had the disease way too long that it's affected organs or other things, that then when they really do want to be healthy, it's kind of a shame because their mortality rate will be shortened anyway because of the after effects of what they've gone through.
Well, Miss M, we actually went an hour and 19 minutes.
I'm so sorry.
No, I mean, I was the one that actually went over because of my longness of breath, so to speak. But I do thank you for coming on. I do thank you for opening up and speaking to me and my listeners. I always ask my guests to leave my listeners with one thought. So I will ask you, what would you like to leave my listeners with?
Well, I will say that you don't always give up hope. And I think that's one reason why parents and family and love members, if you will, stay and hang in there, because there's always a silver lining. I have to say, I understand when you do see it heading south and you say, oh God, you know, it's not going to get better. But then you hear those stories where it does, and you can't give up hope, because I mean, that's what we're here for, right? Is to love one another and help one another and help one another recover, succeed, whatever it is, you know, right?
Yes, we are.
I have to leave you on that silver note, because I just believe, you know, there's always that little hope. You see a little step in the right direction, even if it's a baby step, you mm-hmm. can commend that person and go, okay, do you want recovery? Because hope, maybe around the corner, they're going to say, yep, I do. You know, you just
yes.
never know.
Yeah, and you are absolutely right. And you are right. You are absolutely right. I do believe that if you do see that glimmer of hope, then, you know, it can that glimmer can turn into a spark, which can turn into a light. But
right.
if the lights are just off, just please understand there is nobody there paying the electric bill any longer.
That's true.
Well, I thank you, ma'am, once again.
Thank you kindly,
okay,
sir.
Okay, so because we went so long this week, I did have something else that I was going to say, but I will save that for next week. I'll actually do it in the beginning, and it's important, but it's not important. So I'll just talk about it next week. But for this week, I just want you all to once again just love one another, take care of yourselves, take care of one another, and just understand we have to live together. Thank you very much for being here this week. We are out. Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.